I'm just leaving the gym now. I wanted to say thank you guys so much for all your support on Twitter, Tout, Facebook. Ever since becoming the champion, you guys have been amazing. And I have to say, I'm sorry, I'm not going to make it to NXT Full Sail this week. I really, really want to be there, but I've just been so busy doing WWE live events, radio interviews. It's just been insane. But in proof that your champion is not a liar, I said I was going to Disney World, and I went to Disney World! And for all my Bo-leavers, don't worry, because Bo Dallas is going to be back in NXT next week. And that's a promise. And you know I don't break promises. Just remember, don't stop believing, yeah, yeah!
Rewind. Sound off, 279. Hey, no argument out of me. I'd love to see a Christian Cesaro feud. I think that's a great idea. I also wouldn't mind seeing Christian challenging Dean Ambrose for the United States Championship. That way, at least he's got something to fight over. I think both of those ideas are great. So hopefully somebody's listening, because, you know, there's no reason Christian should be on the sidelines. He's been ready to come back for a while now. The Solid Monster sounds off.
Hulk Hogan has definitely been that rocket fuel that TNA needed.
This doesn't make any sense.
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
He's fat! You haven't been beat up properly! Woo!
Welcome to episode 280 of the Solid Monster Sounds Off here on SEScoops.com and Stitcher Radio for Sunday, June 23rd, 2013. I am the Solid Monster. Hey, Christian's back! And it looks like he may be feuding with The Shield. Possibly Dean Ambrose, even, for the U.S. title. How about that? This is a really fun week, actually, to be a wrestling fan, and in particular a WWE fan. They had a really good pay-per-view last weekend, followed up by a really good Raw Monday night. In fact, it was pretty noteworthy, too. If we take a look at the roll call here, we have CM Punk back, officially, as a babyface. Brock Lesnar, now back. Christian, you heard there, now back. RVD, on his way back. Mark Henry retired, and then quickly unretired, and is now the number one contender for the WWE Championship. Alberto Del Rio, new World Heavyweight Champion, back to being a heel. Dolph Ziggler, finally a babyface. AJ, new Divas Champion, first time ever. Curtis Axel, new Intercontinental Champion, first time ever. So I'd say that's a pretty noteworthy week right there. And I want to talk about Payback a little bit here, not spend too much time on it, but the big news coming out of Payback was actually a 48-second or so vignette that they aired announcing the return of Rob Van Dam. RVD will be returning to WWE July 14th at the Money in the Bank pay-per-view in Philadelphia, his old ECW stomping grounds. Should be very loud and boisterous in the Wells Fargo Center that night, and I will be there live along with Noah Mark. We're going to be doing a sound-off road trip. He's going by plane, I'm going by train. And I'm sure we'll do a show together that weekend. It'll be fun times at Money in the Bank. Reportedly, RVD's new deal, not a long-term one. Long-term meaning years. It's probably more like several months. He will not be working a full-time road schedule, so probably just TVs, pay-per-views, maybe some, you know, house shows here and there. It's not a Brock Lesnar deal, I don't think. Let's put it that way, where he's going to be, you know, making two or three appearances the entire year. He'll be around more often than that. But just won't be at every single show. WWE supposedly has a program in mind for him. I don't know if that involves him winning a Money in the Bank briefcase. Obviously, I would expect him to be in one of the two Money in the Bank matches, but I don't know if him winning is in the cards. I suppose, you know, they could have him win the WWE Championship briefcase and then cash in to face John Cena at SummerSlam in what would be a rematch of their one-night stand bout from 2006, but that would mean that Daniel Bryan gets bumped out of the main event picture like he was at Money in the Bank, which is where he was originally going to get his title shot before plans changed. I don't like that idea at all. I think Daniel Bryan, they should stay the course with him and go full speed ahead with Cena Bryan. I say, why waste a briefcase on Van Damme? You know, he'll go out there, steal the show, or he'll try to anyway, and they can have someone knock him off the ladder maybe at the last possible second as a way to set up his first feud. Why not Randy Orton? Sure, him and Orton will probably be in the same Money in the Bank match, or they could be. And then they could finally do the Orton turn we've been hearing so much about for months. And it sets up another high-profile match for SummerSlam, which would give us Punk versus Lesnar, Cena versus Bryan, RVD versus Orton, and another rumored match for SummerSlam could potentially be The Undertaker and Kane taking on The Shield. Kane's been on television getting his ass kicked every week by The Shield, and the last time we saw The Undertaker, he was being triple-team powerbombed through the announce table on SmackDown. So WWE wants the match. Decision is The Undertaker's to make. If he thinks he can physically do the show, he'll do it. If he doesn't want to do it, he won't do it. But that would be one hell of a SummerSlam lineup right there. RVD took a bit of a swipe at TNA, his most recent employer, during his live podcast, I guess, on his website. He said that he read this under some story somewhere in the comments section. This is what he read. With one 48-second video, WWE can make RVD mean more than he's meant in the last several years. End quote. And RVD said, I think it's true. The reason is because over the last several years, I've had so many people say, RVD, you've got to get back in the ring. What did you do, retire? And I'm always promoting, no, Thursday nights on Spike, every week, I'm on TV. I've done that for 3 years now. I don't know about you, but I get that all the time. And that's the difference between this and this. I assume by this and this, he means WWE and TNA. And you know what? He's 100% right. And I'm not surprised by that at all. Kurt Angle tells stories like that all the time, of being stopped in airports by people, wondering why he retired, and asking him when he's going to come back to WWE. And Kurt's been with TNA now for over 6 years. And there are fans that still have no idea that he's on television every single week. And that's with Hulk Hogan on their show, the most recognizable name in the history of the business. And it just goes to show you, you know, marketing and promotion. They've got to bring people in to fix that, or TNA is never going to get beyond the level they're at now. So I thought that was interesting that RVD would say that, because he's not the first person, the first ex-WWE main event star, to go over to TNA and to experience the same thing. And say what you want to about, you know, TNA and being on Spike, and Spike is a weaker network than USA, it really isn't all that much weaker at all. If they're not in the same number of homes throughout the country, it's pretty close. You know, there's anywhere between 90 and 100 million people who both have USA Network and Spike TV available to them. So that's kind of a bogus excuse. Anyway, back to Payback. Got every prediction right except Del Rio. Screwed me over. Although this was a pay-per-view that was a little bit easier to predict than most, I think. Just a couple of quick notes here. I just have to say, the Divas match on this show with Caitlyn and AJ, I thought was actually very good. Not great or anything like that, and not as good as the Knockouts match from the Slammiversary pay-per-view. And supposedly, I don't know, Vince McMahon was made aware of the match, or somebody in a position of power in this company here was made aware of what the Knockouts went out and did. But they gave these women about 10 minutes, which is, I think, longer than even most Divas matches on pay-per-view, with the idea that they would go out there and have a better match than Gail Kim and Taryn Terrell did. That was their goal, supposedly, with sending these women out there, letting them wrestle. And it's amazing, too, because, you know, you get them out there. Caitlyn's not the best wrestler in the world. AJ, we haven't seen enough of her because she's been more of a valet than a wrestler. She's actually a very good wrestler from what I've seen. When you let them go out there and just wrestle, you never know. You may actually get a good match out of it. And I think that's what we got here at Payback. Again, not as good as what we saw at Slammiversary with the Knockouts, but standing alone on its own, perfectly fine Divas match. Caitlyn absolutely destroyed AJ with a spear later in the match. I thought she just cut her in half. And instead of going for a pin, she decided to blow her a kiss and wasted time. JBL was going on and on commentary about, what is she doing? She's wasting time. She's an idiot. And he was absolutely right. And in the end, it cost her the championship. AJ locked on her Black Widow submission. Caitlyn tapped. And it was very interesting because Caitlyn is the babyface here. Caitlyn is the one who has been bullied and ridiculed and mocked on television by this evil, vindictive, twisted little woman here. And Caitlyn is in tears, having a nervous breakdown. The fans are chanting, "You tapped out," which I don't think is the reaction they were probably going for. But they were in Chicago, and they were a lively bunch. And Caitlyn just looked completely despondent. She was crying. Her makeup was running. I felt bad for her. I really did. We also had the World Heavyweight Championship title change. Alberto Del Rio, Dolph Ziggler, doing what Steve Austin and Bret Hart did back in 1997 at WrestleMania 13 in that very same city. In fact, it may have been in the same building. A double turn. And going into this pay-per-view, if there was going to be a double turn, I would have expected it to be in the CM Punk Chris Jericho match. But no, it was in the World Heavyweight title match. I don't think anybody predicted that. What was interesting about this is going into the pay-per-view, and I think I remarked about this on the show last week, you can now place bets on WWE pay-per-view matches, which just blows my mind and sounds like a horrible idea. I would not urge anybody to do that. But people are now betting on pro wrestling, and apparently in the days leading up to the pay-per-view, Del Rio became a heavy favorite to go over in this match. And it puzzled me because I certainly didn't think Del Rio stood a chance of walking away with the championship. I didn't think they would take the title off Ziggler so soon. But I can almost excuse it if they have a plan going forward here. They wanted to turn him babyface and I guess have him now chase for the title. And that's fine as long as he stays in the title picture. But not very many people, I don't think, were predicting a Del Rio win here. So all of these people at the last minute putting money down on Del Rio over Ziggler. And then lo and behold, Alberto Del Rio happens to win the World Heavyweight Championship. I'm thinking someone in WWE is leaking information to make themselves some money. And if they could do it, hats off to them. Make as much money as you can. I don't know how much longer they're going to be able to do that before somebody catches on, but there's some scam here going on, I'm sure of it. There's a leak or a mole here somewhere, and I found that to be very interesting. But no, betting on pro wrestling is very bad, so don't do that. The match itself was weird because I don't think it was until later in the match people realized what they were doing. Otherwise it was the babyface kicking the shit out of the heel, going after his head. The guy came back from a concussion, which is a potentially career-threatening injury. He's kicking him in the head, building sympathy for Ziggler. I thought the way they executed it was very effective. It was, even though the people cheered when Del Rio won the belt, I mean, anybody would cheer if they saw a world title change. For the most part, they reacted as though they were very upset that Ziggler lost. They booed Del Rio. Ziggler was crying when the match was over because he had his championship taken from him. You know, he should be upset, and he should be angry, and he is. He attacked Del Rio the next night from behind, went crazy on him. The CM Punk Chris Jericho match was awesome. It was a great match between the two of them. I think most people probably would have predicted that going in. I thought Punk looked a little off at first for the first few minutes of the match, like he was maybe shaking off some ring rust. He was moving very slow. I guess it's just the way they paced the match because they picked up later on and it was really good stuff. They began teasing dissension in this match with Punk and Heyman. There was a spot where Heyman thought Punk was in trouble. He started walking up the ring steps onto the apron, distracted the referee. Then he started backtracking down the steps and they had a shot of Punk looking at Heyman like, "What are you doing? Like, stay out of my business." So they kind of started it there, and then by the next night, they just went all the way with it and had Punk officially break up with Heyman as far as Heyman being his manager. But Punk and Jericho apparently went long in their match, according to reports. Even though they had a Match of the Year candidate, they both got yelled at when they got backstage for going long. And I'm in the middle right now of reading Bob Holly's book, The Hardcore Truth, which is excellent, by the way. I'm not done with it, but I'll have a full review on the Sound Off once I'm finished. In the book, Holly talks about WrestleMania 10 and the ladder match between Shawn Michaels and Razor Ramon, which is one of the all-time great matches in WWE history. And for a while there was probably the best match in company history, some would say. And Holly tells the story of being backstage because he was scheduled to be part of a big 10-man tag match that was going to be coming up after the ladder match as a buffer between that and the main event championship match. So Holly's back there, and they get word that the 10-man tag is being cut from the show because they ran long. And obviously Holly is very upset. He wanted to be on the WrestleMania card. I mean, who wouldn't be? You got 10 guys in that match who are pissed off now because they're probably not getting a WrestleMania payoff. So Shawn and Razor come back through the curtain, and instead of being congratulated on what a great match they just had and or getting, you know, an ovation from everybody, he tells the story of Randy Savage being back there, absolutely furious, just incensed beyond belief, beside himself with anger. He's going off on Michaels and Razor about how selfish they are. You know, you can't ignore your time cues. That's the one unpardonable sin of wrestling. You know, you stick to your time cues. When it's time to go home, you go home. And instead, what they were doing was the referee was giving them instructions from the back to go home, and Michaels and Ramon just kept saying, "Fuck off," and ignoring them. And they extended the match longer than it was scheduled to go, which made for a great match, but he's right. you know, Savage had every right to be upset about that because these guys were selfish and they took it upon themselves to essentially force 10 guys who were going to wrestle on the show to have their match on Raw, I think, a week later instead. There's a big difference between Monday Night Raw back then and WrestleMania. And it's happened before. You know, it's not the first time you've got, like, two main eventers who, you know, choose to go long when they're not supposed to. I remember reading about the Rock Triple H ladder match at SummerSlam in that same building, Madison Square Garden, in 1998, eating into the main event. Main event was supposed to be Austin versus Undertaker, the big Highway to Hell match. As a fan, I actually liked the fact that match went long because I thought they had a hell of a ladder match, and I was bored for the. I actually was bored by that Austin Undertaker match. That's not one of my favorite matches between the two of them. I'm a much bigger fan of their fully loaded First Blood match the following year. But they got in a lot of trouble, a lot of hot water for that too, because they're getting instructions from the back telling Triple H and The Rock, go home, instead of, you know, they ended up going, I think, like 27 minutes, and it was probably like 14 minutes or 15 minutes in they got the instruction to go home, and they said no. They blew them off. They just kept going. And as a fan, like I said, great, we got a much longer ladder match, but I could see where being a Steve Austin or an Undertaker backstage, you'd be pissed off about something like that. So, I happened to be in the middle of the Holly book when I read about Punk and Jericho getting yelled at. It just reminded me that, yeah, this is not the first time something like this has happened. And you got two guys going out there having a match of the year, and they come backstage and they get yelled at. The tag title match with Orton and Bryan against The Shield got shortchanged a little bit because that match went long, and Cena Ryback had their big Three Stages of Hell match in the main event. It was exactly what you would expect it to be. It was a good match. It was nothing really to sing home about. It was every John Cena main event that you'll see. You know, the effort was there and all that, but I don't know. I mean, coming off the Punk Jericho thing, it just kind of fell flat to me. And the biggest thing, well, actually two things. First of all, it's the only time you're ever going to see Antonio Cesaro and Zack Ryder in a pay-per-view main event. They were out there as lumberjacks for the first fall. The other thing is, this loss that Ryback sustained here at Payback makes 8 straight pay-per-view losses for this man. He didn't win the championship last month at Extreme Rules, so that's a loss as far as I'm concerned. Ryback is the New York Mets of WWE. SEScoops.com tweeted out that the last pay-per-view victory for Ryback was in July of last year in a handicap match against Tyler Rex and Curt Hawkins. He beat 2 job guys on pay-per-view. That was the last time he won. So stick a fork in him. He's done. Ryback is finished. I don't know what they have planned for him next, but obviously whatever it is, he'll be moving down the card, and that's probably where he'll be staying for a while. That brought us to Raw. The next night, Grand Rapids, Michigan. Great crowd, very lively crowd. And that's great to see because they were treated to a really awesome show on Monday night. We're going to do the good, the bad, and the ugly. Very little bad, no ugly, almost all good this week. Not perfect, of course, but I don't see how very many fans can really complain about Raw from Monday night. It was really a very enjoyable 3 hours, and I can't remember the last time I said that. CM Punk and Brock Lesnar, that really is the big story coming out of the show. The march to SummerSlam. They are heading for a Punk-Lesnar match. Both guys made their Monday Night Raw return on this show. We haven't seen Punk in over 2 months on Raw. Same thing for Brock. Actually, we saw Brock in May, I guess, after Extreme Rules. But either way, it's been many, many weeks since we saw either man on this television show. Punk was as beloved in Grand Rapids as he was in Chicago. So all it took was one night back. I mean, we knew he was going to get cheered in his hometown, but he is officially a babyface again. And like I said, in Chicago, I knew he would be, but I guess everybody's already forgotten that it was not even 3 months ago that this man desecrated the ashes of The Undertaker's close personal friend, Paul Bearer. So a very forgiving bunch are wrestling fans. Punk and Heyman on this show officially did their split. It was in a backstage segment. Punk said, listen, you know, I don't need you. Brock Lesnar, he needs you. Curtis Axel, he needs your help. You and I were friends. And they had an amicable, or so we thought, an amicable parting of the ways. He said he doesn't want Paul coming to the ring with him anymore. And Heyman seemed to be taking it okay. You know, there was a segment right before Punk went out for his main event match with Alberto Del Rio where Heyman gave him a hug, said he loved him. And I like the story they're telling here, if this is the story they're telling, because how I read this is this. Punk has his match with Del Rio, wins by countout. Brock Lesnar's music hits, Brock comes out, circles the ring like a shark, goes in, teases that he's going to speak on the microphone, and thank God we avoided that. And instead he picks up Punk above his head and gives him an F5, flings him through the air, and Punk actually landed right on his knees, which made me cringe because Punk was out nursing some sore knees. And Brock smiles, walks off, hell of a way to end the show. And so now the question is going to be, you know, did Paul Heyman know about this? Did he send Brock out there as his hired gun? Is he going to claim that Brock did it on his own? I had nothing to do with this. Please, I want you guys to get along. I guess we'll see how the story unfolds. It'll be some good storytelling to follow over the next several weeks. The way I look at this is Paul Heyman does not take kindly to clients who begin to go rogue and rebel against him. And you need not look any further back than the Survivor Series in 2002 involving Brock Lesnar, who was Heyman's client at the time. They went into that pay-per-view. It was a big match between Brock and Big Show for the WWE Championship. A moment I'll never forget when Brock picked Big Show up on his shoulders, which people didn't pick Big Show up on their shoulders back then. You know, now it's more commonplace. You know, John Cena will pick people up. Sheamus will pick people up. We see feats of strength all the time. When Brock did that with Big Show at Survivor Series, that was a highlight reel moment. And Paul Heyman interferes at the last second and costs Brock the match and aligns with Big Show. And the reason is, Brock on television leading up to that pay-per-view was already starting to disregard things that Heyman was telling him to do. So Heyman saw the writing on the wall. He saw that this monster that he created was going out on his own, and he was going to do whatever he had to do to put a stop to it. And I see it as being... it's great character continuity as far as the Paul Heyman character is concerned, because here we are now, more than a decade later, Punk is doing his thing. He doesn't like that Paul is, you know, trying to interfere in his matches or meddle in his affairs, and he says, listen, just stay out of my business, we'll be friends, let me do my thing. And Paul feigns, you know, being okay with it. Oh, okay, sure, you know, I love you, we'll always be friends. And that very same night, he doesn't even let a week go by, that very same night, there's Brock Lesnar to send a message to CM Punk. And I assume it was Brock, you know, doing it on his own, and that Punk was saying how Brock needs your help, but I don't need your help, and Brock took offense to it. Now, how Brock Lesnar got to the show so quickly, if that's the story, he must have a jet pack or perhaps a private jet that flew him directly to Grand Rapids. I don't know, but that's how I look at this. It's great character continuity with the Heyman character, and it goes all the way back to the first time Heyman fucked over Brock at Survivor Series in 02. And I love that. I hope that's the story. I hope that's the direction they go in, that when you start to go rogue and Paul Heyman sees the slightest bit of discontent or the slightest little chink in the armor, he casts you aside like nothing. You're dead to him. I love it. I love it. The other great thing on the show... got to talk about the greatness of Mark Henry, the world's strongest man, who was teasing retirement on Twitter. He was teasing it to the point where I didn't think he was actually retiring, but boy, he got me going during this segment. So John Cena comes out, cuts a promo, and it's the same John Cena promo we always hear, and I am so sick to death of John Cena promos where he comes out and he talks about how, you know, there's going to be haters, you know, haters going to hate, but... you know, stay true to yourself and blah, blah, blah. Who gives a shit? It's the same John Cena promo we hear every freaking month after a pay-per-view match. This segment is awesome, not because of anything John Cena said. It's because of everything that Mark Henry did. Henry comes out, and Cena goes to leave to give him his time, and Henry says, no, John, I want you to stay. But Cena is not physically in the ring. I like the way they did this, because I feel like if Cena was in the ring with him the whole time, people would have just been waiting for Henry to turn on him. The fact that Cena kind of stepped out onto the apron was a nice little subtle touch, I think, where people were like, okay, maybe this is legit and Cena's just out there to observe. And Henry went on to get, and he's been with the company since 1996. And in 2013 here on Monday night, he delivered the single greatest promo of his entire career. He was out there, his tears were streaming out of his face like a faucet. He kept wiping away the tears. He talked about his family. He talked about his kids, including his baby daughter, who always cries when he leaves home, and how now, you know, his wife will have more time to spend with him and all that. He calls John, you know, at the rate you're going, you're going to go down as maybe the greatest champion of all time. That was the only time in this entire segment, by the way, until the end, where Mark Henry got booed, was when he complimented John Cena. And we've seen this before. There was a period of time where WWE was so desperate to get people to like John Cena, they would parade Bret Hart, Mick Foley, all of these legends would come out, Roddy Piper, to compliment John Cena. And no matter what they did, every single time one of these beloved Hall of Famers would defend John Cena, they would get booed. It's like, stop fighting it. People do not like this man. You will not send somebody out there and convince people to suddenly cheer for John Cena. I think after 8 years, their minds were pretty much made up. Cena did come in the ring at one point to give Mark the WWE Championship, which he held up. He gave the title back to Cena, said, this is not something that you're given, it's something that you earn. Cena came back in the ring eventually. He held up Mark Henry's hand. The people totally bought into this. They were fully behind Mark Henry. There were people in the crowd crying. They had me convinced. And, you know, it's not an easy thing to do with angles these days to convince people that it's real. Part of it is, I remember the Edge segment. When Edge retired in 2011, I almost felt bad when it was over because I didn't buy into it at all. By the end, I did, but I just thought, okay, they're doing an angle. Edge is going to come out. He's going to fake announce his retirement. And I spent more than half that promo thinking it was phony or wondering, okay, what's going to happen now? You know, who's going to come out? And it wasn't until I realized, oh, shit, this is real, and I felt bad about it. Because how often do we get to see legitimate retirements and legitimate, genuine segments like this on a WWE show? It doesn't happen very often. So I thought back to the Edge segment, and I thought to myself, well, you know, maybe it's legit. Maybe they're just going to give Mark Henry the forum to go out there and say what's on his mind and call it a career, because he's been there for a long time. He's not getting any younger. He's had a whole bunch of injuries. It's very easy to believe that this could have been it for Mark Henry. So even though JBL was on commentary saying, you know, the WWE title is the only one that Mark Henry hasn't won, that should have been a sign, I bought into it. Hook, line, and sinker. He got me. And out of nowhere, he grabs John Cena. They go for a hug. He picks him up. World's Strongest Slam. And I have to correct myself because I said before that when Henry complimented Cena, that was the only time until the end that they booed him. That was the only time they booed him, period. Mark Henry was cheered when he did that to John Cena. I think part of it was because he fooled so many people. They were almost like, oh, wow, you know, you got me. And it was almost like a complimentary clap, like, congratulations, that's not an easy thing to do. But there were people who were elated to see him lay out John Cena. So this whole segment was a home run. From the moment Mark Henry walked out, forget the beginning where John Cena cut his promo because that's the same shit every week. From the moment Mark Henry walked out until the moment he left, and he's yelling at John Cena, I got a lot left in the tank, I ain't done yet. He goes, that's what I do. This was phenomenal. This was awesome. This was the best performance of Mark Henry's career. This sets up a WWE Championship match at Money in the Bank, which I assume is just a buffer until SummerSlam and they go with Cena Bryan, because I don't see Henry and Cena doing any sort of extended program. And as great as Mark Henry was here, I don't know that the match will be great. You know, Mark Henry can have really good matches. I don't know that John Cena is the best opponent for him, that John Cena can kind of help carry him to having a great match. We'll see at the pay-per-view, but they can afford to have a title match that doesn't headline the show, so to speak, because they've got two Money in the Bank ladder matches. You're going to get great matches with those two ladder matches, so you don't have to have the strongest championship match on this show. Maybe that was the mentality going into this, but this was great stuff. The other good thing, Alberto Del Rio, now a heel. He is infinitely better as a heel. And I know that he loves it more because he used to do interviews all the time when he was still a heel saying, if it were up to me, I would never be a babyface. I would be a heel for the rest of my career. I love it. It's awesome. Because he used to be a babyface down in Mexico when he wore a mask and he was Dos Caras Jr. He was a babyface worker. It wasn't until he came to WWE, they took the mask off him, they gave him the gimmick, that he became a heel and he embraced it. He loved it. He didn't want to ever be a babyface again. And then, so what did they do? They turned him into a babyface because they were looking for that next big Latin star. You know, Rey Mysterio is... We're going to talk about Rey in a little bit, but he's closer to retirement than not, let's put it that way. Sin Cara has been a bust. Who else do they have as the next big Latin hope? I've advocated for Sean Hernandez before in TNA. I mean, there's not a lot they can do. He's, I think, pretty much locked up down there, but... For some reason, I think if Hernandez came over, had some more seasoning and developmental, he's got the size they like, he's not a bad worker, he's not a great worker, but he's not a bad worker, I could see him getting over with the audience and maybe being that next guy. But they don't have anybody like that right now. And with Del Rio as a babyface, it just never clicked because he's just such a friggin' natural as a heel. Now, the only thing I'm hoping is they bring back his old entrance, bring back the car and everything else, just go back to the way it was. You know, he's been a babyface now for like 5 or 6 months. So it'll probably be 2 months before I get sick of him again as a heel. So he's got this grace period with me of 2 months. But he was very good on this show. He cut a heel promo that I have to defend Del Rio here for a second, because he explained in this promo that all he did at Payback was what Dolph Ziggler did to him the night after WrestleMania. I was at that show. You know, Del Rio had a match with Swagger. He won. But his leg was all busted up. He couldn't even stand up on it. He was hurt. And Dolph Ziggler came out, the place exploded, he cashed in his Money in the Bank briefcase, and when the bell rung, the first thing Ziggler did was he went after Del Rio's knee. He kicked his leg out from underneath him. So Del Rio made a perfectly logical point here. I have to say, I side with him in this argument. He's absolutely right. He exploited an injury. There's no rule, there's no law against that. He did the same thing that Ziggler did to him after WrestleMania, only he went after the head instead of the knee. So I thought that was a very compelling argument for him to make. And he called everybody in America pigs and cowards, and that brought out Punk, and that led to the main event that I mentioned earlier. Christian is also back, finally, at last. Wasn't that his old theme music, At Last, You're On Your Own? Yes, At Last, Christian is back. You heard that little ditty I played from last week's sound off at the beginning of the show. It was a mailbag question from last week. Ironically enough, had no knowledge that Christian was coming back this week. But I answered that question. Christian has been ready for a while. When we were at Fan Access at WrestleMania, myself, Noah Mark, Brian Blade, we got a chance to speak with Dr. Michael Sampson, the same doctor you saw on Raw Monday night who called the match off between Brian and Orton. We talked to him for a little bit, and he told us that Christian is ready to go. He's just waiting for them to come up with an idea for him. So that was back in late March, early April. So Christian's been ready to come back for a while. He came out as a surprise opponent for Wade Barrett. He beat Barrett, and poor Wade. Wade was the Intercontinental Champion. They did nothing with him. He lost the Intercontinental title, lost to Christian. Got like a jobber entrance, too. They don't even bother showing his entrance, I don't think, now on TV. And here's a guy who, before he got hurt last year, was probably slated for a Money in the Bank briefcase. And aside from John Cena being the only person ever to lose after cashing in, it's safe to say that Wade Barrett may already be a world heavyweight champion had he not been hurt. So, sucks for him. It's just right place, right time. You go away for a little bit. Somebody else is slotted in there, and it's just the way things go. I'm sure he'll work his way back up at some point, but I do kind of feel bad for the guy. But Christian looked good. He had a match on SmackDown as well. He was cutting a promo after the match. When the Shield came out to attack, they laid him out. I'm just saying, they haven't announced that it's going to be Christian against Dean Ambrose or done anything beyond what we saw in SmackDown. But it would make sense, unless they're just going to put Christian with somebody else and do tag matches, that they may well do Christian and Dean Ambrose for the United States Championship, which is what I suggested they do last week, because I just think the two of them could have some great kick-ass matches, and Christian can make Ambrose looked good, not that he needs it. So hopefully that's the direction they're going in. I just didn't expect it to happen so soon after I talked about it last week. Antonio Cesaro is officially a Zeb Coulter guy. He wrestled William Regal, a rare Raw appearance for William Regal. He got some offense in, but for the most part it was just a Cesaro squash. But really cool to see both those guys on Raw, and they're finally doing something with Cesaro. Second week in a row now, I think, that Cesaro's gotten a win on Raw. So, thumbs up on that. Team Hell No is no more. I'm putting this in the good category because the way they did this, they did a backstage segment with Brian and Kane. And Brian said that he's got to focus on himself. He's got to go his own way and be worried just about Team DB, which Kane said was quite appropriate because Brian was acting like a DB, which is actually a really good line. And they agreed to go their separate ways. They both have aspirations to be the WWE champion. This is the first time, by the way, we've heard Bryan acknowledge that, so that's a sign right there. That is the direction they're going in with him and Cena. He said he wants to be the WWE champion. Kane says, well, I want to be the WWE champion too. So I wonder if at some point maybe it leads to a Bryan versus Kane match between now and SummerSlam at some point, maybe some sort of number one contenders match, although I would think Bryan would win a briefcase, and that's how he would kind of cash in and get his title shot against Cena. Cash in advance, not the night of. None of his bullshit, let me cash in after the guy's already down. Like, if Bryan's going to win the briefcase, he's got to come right out on Raw the next night and just announce that I'm cashing this in against John Cena at SummerSlam and just build the match from there. Especially if you know, he's going to be your next big babyface, even if he's number two behind Cena. You know, let him cash in 3-4 weeks in advance, like a real man, and let him win or lose based on how good he is, not whether or not he can kick a man while he's down. So I like this because I said last week on the Sound Off that I don't want Team Hell No to break up with one guy turning heel on the other. We've seen that a million times. I like the fact that they can break up but still be friends, but still be cool with each other, and they could always, you know, revisit the team at some point, do comedy together backstage, but just not be a full-time tag team anymore. And that's what they did here. So that's awesome. We had an AJ Lee promo on this show that I wanted to mention also. AJ is very good in these segments. She's very good on the microphone. And this was a very good segment despite Stephanie McMahon's inclusion in it. I love it whenever Stephanie is out there like she was on Monday and she speaks away from the microphone. She covers the microphone a little bit. Like, she doesn't want anybody to hear what she's about to say to the person she's in the ring with, even though we can hear every single word of it. But it's like a secret. Like, we're not supposed to know. I like that. Actually, I don't. I don't like that at all. But we got a Caitlyn nip slip in this segment, which I missed it the first time. But Twitter certainly did not. My timeline blew up and SE Scoops went nuts with it. Boy, SE Scoops, between the nip slip stuff and all their photos of AJ Lee, I'm a little creeped out, gotta say. Not that I disagree. They're both very attractive. Even Caitlyn with the work that she's had done on her face. It's funny, when you see Caitlyn laugh or cry, it's like her face doesn't move. Anybody else notice that? I'll never understand why a pretty girl sees the need to go ahead and do that to themselves and just Botox their face into oblivion. Just don't do that. Of course, with the good comes the bad. There's very little bad on this show, but the one bad thing was pretty bad. It was during the Orton-Bryan match, which you would think would be awesome. And they were having a pretty good match up until the point that Bryan got hurt. Bryan actually did a tope at one point through the ropes outside onto Orton, and it looked like he landed headfirst right into the corner where the floor meets the barricade. It looked really brutal. But that's not where he got hurt. What happened is Bryan came off the top rope to do his missile drop kick where he lands right on his back. And normally he'll kip up. That's what he's been doing, like the Shawn Michaels kip up. Well, this time there was no kip up. And that's what caught my eye at first. Like, I knew from the moment it happened that he got hurt. Because I went on Twitter and said, oh shit, he's hurt. And there were people saying, no, it's a work. They're doing another injury angle. Why are they doing so many injury angles at once? Well, it wasn't an angle, that's why, because he actually did get hurt. Apparently, Bryan suffered a stinger. He was feeling numb, he couldn't, he was having trouble moving around, which is a scary situation to be in. But he suffered a stinger, not nerve damage, as they were teasing on television. And, you know, the last time WWE strapped the Rocket on somebody and they suffered a stinger during the biggest push of their career, that guy's name was Steve Austin, and things turned out okay for him. So I'm sure Daniel Bryan will be just fine, but it was a scary situation there for a while, and you could tell that they weren't exactly sure what was going on, the referee or Orton. I went back to watch it. You see Randy Orton at one point is on the mat looking over at the referee, and he just very plainly, clear as day, shouts, "What the fuck is going on?" It's just, there's no ambiguity there. Randy Orton had no fucking clue what was going on. And what's kind of odd to me is that if you know the guy is hurt, okay, the match now has gone to hell, or it's on its way to hell. Okay, they're trying to save this match here. They were having a really good match. But it's obvious that Bryan is hurt. They're not working an angle here. And Brian wants to continue to wrestle because the doctor came over and the doctor was about to stop the match. Brian was having none of it. He did not want this match stopped for any reason at all. And if you notice, when the doctor was about to call it the first time, Brian ran away from him because he knew what was about to happen. So instead, Brian got up, he was on the outside, and he literally ran away from the doctor. He ran. He made a beeline for the ring and just went right after Orton. And what's the doctor going to do? I mean, the doctor, I guess he still could have ended it at that point, but Brian's back in. He's looking okay. He's throwing kicks. But you could tell his arm was kind of at his side. I thought maybe he hurt his arm at first. He tried to skin the cat, which probably wasn't the wisest thing to do. He only had use of one arm, but ultimately he did it. He did the skin the cat before Orton knocked him outside again. Just a very weird situation until the doctor finally said, okay, that's it. Enough's enough. Call the match. They called it off. They gave the win to Randy Orton. And Orton went outside. He helped Brian to his feet, gave him a hug, said a few words to him. Brian walked off. Daniel Bryan looked so pissed off when this was over. And I felt so bad for him because he's in the middle of the biggest push of his career. He's worked his whole career for this. And for him to get hurt now would be just awful. And he did get hurt. Thankfully, it's not that serious. He wrestled on SmackDown. They actually announced the Daniel Bryan versus Dean Ambrose match for SmackDown, which ended up not happening. They went with Bryan versus Orton in a rematch. And Bryan won by countout, although he was none too happy about that. They've already announced that Bryan versus Orton 3 will take place on Raw this Monday night, which is where I presume that Bryan gets the big win that he was supposed to get on Raw Monday night. It was supposed to be a Daniel Bryan victory. I assume they'll just kind of do it all over again on Raw this Monday. I don't even know why they bother announcing matches for SmackDown half the time, because they end up not even happening. Same thing with Main Event. Why bother announcing matches if you're just going to change them the next day? But what I was getting at before is, if Orton knew Bryan was hurt, I mean, he gave him an exploder suplex. He had him outside. He gave him a back suplex on the edge of the barricade. I mean, this guy, granted, Orton didn't know exactly what happened. He didn't know maybe that it was a neck injury. Why would you do that? Why would you drop the guy on the back of his head on the barricade? You know he's not quite right. You know he's hurt. You know, hey, Randy Orton, he don't fuck around. You know, if Brian wants to go, he'll go. And ultimately, the doctor called it off. So here's what happened behind the scenes, apparently, with Brian and Triple H. Because at first, I thought this was all just a storyline, and then I heard, well, it's not a storyline, this actually did happen. Apparently what happened is, you know, Brian goes backstage, he finds Triple H at the gorilla position, and a loud screaming match ensues between the two of them. They're both yelling at each other, and Brian is just going off on him. I've been wrestling for 13 years, I know my body better than anybody, how dare you, you don't stop a match, I could still go. And Triple H's argument is, well, that may well be true, but I'm in charge here right now, at least for this segment, and I have your safety and health and well-being as my top priority, and you're an important part of the roster. I was told you were hurt. It was the recommendation of the doctor to stop the match, and therefore the match was stopped. So they went back and forth. Apparently they almost came to blows, and in the end they both ended up cooling off. They apologized to each other. And I see people online, well, that's the end of Daniel Bryan's push. That's it. He's going to start jobbing out again. I don't get why people would think that. You hear all these backstage stories about, you know, Vince McMahon likes it when people stand up to him. Vince doesn't like people who are timid and shy and who back down. If anything, I think it would have the opposite effect. I think people may look at Daniel Bryan differently now as some guy who had some pretty big balls to go back there and go face-to-face with Triple H and ream the guy out. If anything, I'd have more respect for the guy. But it's hard to picture Daniel Bryan in that mode because he is a very quiet, mild-mannered kind of guy. I've seen him like in Ring of Honor matches get really angry and stuff like that, but I've never seen him in WWE or outside the ring get really animated before. So, I mean, when we had the chance to meet him and interview him in Miami over WrestleMania weekend last year, and we spent a good 15 minutes, 20 minutes with him, I mean, he was the nicest guy you'll ever meet. Totally down to earth, funny, personable. We talked even when the interview was over, you know, just me and him back and forth. I mean, he seems like a really level-headed, cool dude. And it blows my mind to think that he would kind of go backstage and blow up in the way that was described. But, yeah, I would have loved to have been a fly in the wall when this whole thing went down. But they dodged a bullet. There's no doubt about that. When Steve Austin suffered that stinger back in 1997, I mean, obviously, long-term, it shortened his career. I'm sure Austin would still be wrestling on and off, you know, big matches today had he not sustained that neck injury. He was out for about three. He didn't wrestle again until Survivor Series. And even when he came back at Survivor Series, he wasn't quite ready. They held him out for 3 months. Holding Bryan out right now for 3 months in the middle of the biggest push of his career would be devastating to him. Team Rhodes Scholars beat Sheamus in a handicap match on this show, although Cody Rhodes was just made to look like a total fool. I didn't see all of SmackDown. Apparently, he and Sheamus, he got some offense in his match with Sheamus on Friday, but he looked like a complete fool here. And Sheamus left him laying in the end and had his music playing, basically giving you the impression that Sheamus won the match. So why not just have Sheamus win the match then? You know? What does Damian Sandow really get out of this, you know, what we saw on Monday night? He got a quick schoolboy roll-up of Sheamus, and he won. But Sheamus is the last man standing in the ring with his music playing. He basically won the match. So I thought that was kind of dumb. That was it. That's the only bad thing I can really say. I got nothing else to complain about as far as Raw Monday night. I wish every week would be like this week. Not every week can be as eventful and newsworthy, I guess, as Raw was on Monday. But if they could find the right balance between what we had this week with your normal standard episode of Raw, they might be able to find themselves a winning formula. Let's hope so. I mentioned Rey Mysterio's name a little while earlier, and I want to talk about Rey for a few minutes here. Rey tweeted this week that he was having yet another surgery. He didn't indicate what kind of surgery it was. Maybe he has in the days since. I'm just going on some of the tweets of his that I saw a few days ago. He tweeted that he was having a minor procedure done with Dr. James Andrews down in Birmingham. Should be in for about 2 hours, he said. And when I posted a little message on Twitter just mentioning the news and, you know, saying, get well soon, Sin Cara needs you, and boy does he ever, because Sin Cara is going nowhere fast. He's a sinking stone in that company with that Rey Mysterio. So I tweeted, you know, get well soon or whatever, and the reaction from other people on Twitter talking about Rey Mysterio and some other threads and whatnot was, well, he should just retire. Why is he, you know, having surgery? He's going to come back again. He's just going to get hurt. And for a while there, I was like many of you. Why doesn't he just retire? You know, call it quits. Call it a career. You've accomplished more than most people probably would have ever expected. I don't think anybody would have expected Rey Mysterio Jr., the Cruiserweight Champion in WCW, would one day be a world champion and a WWE champion, albeit for one night. Believe me, there isn't one person, maybe except Rey and his family, who expected that one day he might make it that far. He's a future Hall of Famer. He really is. Some people might disagree with that. I see Rey Mysterio as a shoo-in, as a Hall of Fame. Even if this were a legit Hall of Fame, we're not talking about, you know, the Vince McMahon in his mind Hall of Fame. Either way, Rey Mysterio is a shoo-in. Because if nothing else, for the impact that he has had on smaller guys, I think he has opened the doors for a lot of smaller guys to get opportunities that they otherwise would not have gotten. Kind of the same way that Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels did when they were first getting their big push and showing people what kind of workers they were. It's kind of cliche to say, but in a way, Rey Mysterio did kind of blaze a trail. If for no other reason than all the other championships he's also won, he's certainly a Hall of Famer. I would hate to see the dude end up in a wheelchair. I don't think anybody wants to see him end up crippled and mangled, which he might anyway. His knees, I mean, he's had so many operations on his knees already, but so does Kevin Nash. You know, Kevin Nash is a big guy. He used to be a basketball player. Kevin Nash has had like 20-something surgeries on his knees, and he's still doing indie shots. Now, granted, Kevin Nash is not going in the ring and doing nearly as much as Rey Mysterio would. I've never seen Kevin Nash do a Hurricanrana, for example, or a tope. Actually, I have seen Kevin Nash do suicide dives before, so I do give him credit for that. So nobody wants to see Rey Mysterio end up crippled. But the more I think about this, it's kind of offensive for people to react that way, because to say, you know, just retire, why do you keep coming back? Ugh, Rey Mysterio again, you know, we just know he's going to get hurt. From his perspective, I'm sure, he wants to make as much money as he can while he still can do it. And I say, why not? He's going to be 40 years old next year. Believe it or not, Rey Mysterio is going to be 40 and he's not getting any younger. So if he thinks he can still go and he knows his body, then why stop him? Personally, I would love to see him work with some of the newer guys like the Shield and the Wyatt family. And what's good about Ray is because he's so small, I mean, he's heavier now than he used to be, but he's still a small guy. So when you bring in like a Bray Wyatt, let's say, and his family, if Mysterio were to get tangled up with them in some way, the thing that Ray's always been good at is you can throw Ray around like a rag doll. You know, you can backdrop him way high in the air. You can do these stunts where you throw him out of the ring and do all these cool-looking things that help get the other guy over. You know, the Shield maybe will attack Ray one day, and maybe they'll give him a triple team power bomb from the ring, maybe through the announce desk at ringside. Some cool stunt like. See, I'm talking about Rey Mysterio like I'm trying to kill the poor guy. But I would love to see him work with these guys. I think they could really gain a lot by working with him, and Ray can make anybody look like $1 million because he bumps great. You know, he's still very quick inside the ring, even with the bad knees and all that. And they're bringing up so much new talent now. And I feel like if they've got this main event level guy who doesn't have that much longer left in him, and I don't think he does. I don't think, for example, when Rey Mysterio is Undertaker's age or Kane's age in his mid to late 40s, I don't think we will still see him on the active WWE roster. I just don't. I think his full-time active career will be done a lot sooner rather than later, which is another reason why I don't necessarily, you know, I'm not like everybody else. He should retire. I want him to retire. I want him to come back, and I want him to have matches with these guys because the more newer guys that work with him, the more fresh matchups we have, the better off they'll be. And Ray, you know, it extends his career a little bit more. But he is one big injury away from potentially that being it for him. And I don't want to see him end up in a wheelchair, but I trust the guy knows what he's doing. And let's just lay off the Rey Mysterio hate. I think there's just some people also who just hate Rey Mysterio for whatever reason. I've always liked the guy. You know, he's fun to watch in the ring. He seems like a nice enough guy. I mean, I've only met him briefly one time, but I just was amazed at all the hate. It wasn't like, get well soon, or, you know, oh, it sucks that he's had all these surgeries. It's like, oh, God, there he goes again, another surgery. It's like, just hang it up, Rey. It's like, really? Maybe that's his decision to make and not yours? Did that thought ever, you know, cross your mind? And I think there's a lot left that he can do in WWE, and I hope he does. I hope he comes back, and I hope he works with these new guys. I want to spend a few minutes here recapping another enjoyable episode of NXT, my fifth week of watching this show now. It's a very fun 45 minutes, and this show was no different. We had Adrian Neville, which I think this was his first match on NXT since I started watching, so since Pac came over to WWE and got the Adrian Neville gimmick, I haven't really seen too much of him, so this was my first time seeing him in singles action here. He had a match with Bray Wyatt, and it was too short to mean anything. Literally within like 2 or 3 minutes, the Wyatt family interfered for the DQ. Dusty Rhodes came out to his American Dream theme music, and he made it a 6-man match. It was going to be the Wyatt family against Adrian Neville, Cassius Ohno, and Corey Graves. So even though it was too short to mean a damn thing, it was setting up the main event, so that's okay. Angelo Dawkins made his NXT debut on this show. I had not seen him before. We were told that he is a 3-sport athlete. He played football, did wrestling, and track. He was a national champion in college, so all very impressive, except his match here. He looked pretty plain. But this was really just a showcase for Sami Zayn, not for Angelo Dawkins. Sami Zayn, the former El Generico, doing very well down in NXT. He nailed his springboard tornado DDT for the win. Nothing much to it. They had a promo video hyping the return of Leo Kruger. Leo Kruger is the guy that when Conor O'Brien's partner went all dopey and they fired him, I suggested that they put Leo Kruger in with Conor O'Brien to keep the Ascension tag team going. I thought the Ascension team, they had a good gimmick. They were probably on their way to the roster soon enough, and they didn't do that. Conor O'Brien is doing his own thing, and Leo Kruger is doing his own thing. What his thing is, I don't know. I didn't even know Leo Kruger ever left, but they did a promo video hyping his return. My question is this, what's with all these creepy vignettes that we've been getting lately for these new guys? You know, between this and the Wyatt family stuff, I'm begging for them to bring up one or two guys from developmental who appear sane and happy. It's like they're bringing a bunch of guys up from a mental institution or something. NXT Women's Championship Tournament, Sasha Banks against Summer Rae. The announcers informed us that Sasha is the cousin of one Snoop Lion. And Brodus Clay actually was once a bodyguard for Snoop Lion. I feel so ridiculous calling him Snoop Lion, but then I tell myself that I call myself the Sala Monster, and I guess I should probably keep my mouth shut. But yeah, his cousin is a diva down at NXT, and his former bodyguard now is on television. I mean, being a bodyguard, that's like being blood, right? Being someone's bodyguard, trusting them with your life. Soon, the Snoop Lion clan may give the hearts of the Von Erichs a run for their money as wrestling's greatest family. So, in this match, I think the only real offense that Sasha got was this violent barrage of... The only way I can describe this is titty chops. She was smacking away at Summer Rae's chest. And Summer Rae was selling this like somebody was firing a Tommy gun at her. It was actually quite comical. Probably the best part of the whole match. But for the most part, this was really just a squash for Summer Rae. And the only thing I got out of this match was Summer Rae has really long legs, like Stacy Keibler, and she screams a lot. That's about it. She also won with Big Show's final cut leg drop move. So she advances in the tournament. We got an Xavier Woods promo after this. Xavier Woods is the former Consequences Creed, for those of you TNA fans. I like how in NXT, with the backstage promos they do, you know, this one, it was just him, no announcer, but even the ones where Renee Young interviews someone, I like how they cut out the crowd noise in the background. That's how it used to be years and years ago when they'd throw it to, like, Mean Gene backstage. And they didn't play to the crowd. You didn't hear people doing the what chant or anything like that in the background. They were just able to focus on the promo, and that's where your focus was. I like that about NXT. But Xavier Woods here, he did this clever deal where he introduced himself because I guess it's been weeks, maybe months, since he's been on NXT. I've been watching for 5 weeks now, and this is the first I've seen of him. And he says, you know, you might remember me from such episodes as NXT, you know, 139, 153, 157. Then all of a sudden his watch makes this beeping noise and he says, it's morphin' time. So I guess he's supposed to be a Power Ranger. We had Jake Carter taking on the aforementioned Xavier Woods. Woods has really catchy disco-type theme music that he dances to. Yeah, it's not a main event gimmick or anything like that, but I think he could be a solid, you know, mid-card guy, like a U.S. or Intercontinental title contender. Maybe he could settle into a comedy role that gets him on television every week. You know, one level up from Santino, because Santino really isn't a good worker. Xavier Woods is. He beat Baby Miz here with the Rolling Thunder clothesline and his Lost in the Woods finisher, which is Gail Kim's Eat Defeat. Before he launched into that final sequence, he again shouted, it's morphin' time. I don't know what he's morphin' into. I guess that's his way of hulking up. But every time he says that, I can't help but not think of the Power Rangers. We had Renee Young backstage with Sami Zayn after a hard-fought victory earlier. He wants round three against Antonio Cesaro. And I say, great, let's have it. Let's have rounds three, four, and five for all I care. Short, to the point, nothing fancy, good promo. Backstage, we saw Sylvestre Lefort talking to his men, Scott Dawson and Garrett Dillon. We have Dusty Rhodes walk in with some exciting news. He says next week, Dawson and Dillon will be in a number one contenders tag team title match against Corey Graves and Cassius Ohno. Dawson and Dillon, they do nothing for me, but Lefort is great. He's like a living, breathing version of Pepe Le Pew. And I don't know if they bring him up to the main roster, if they'll feature him as an in-ring performer. He was pretty good on Lance Storm's reality show, World of Hurt, when that thing was on, because Lance Storm trained him up in Calgary, and they signed him to a contract not long after that. I could see him settling into the role, for example, they gave Rico Constantine. I remember Rico. Rico was actually a really good worker. He was a little older when he got his break. But that's fine. I mean, there are people, like, look at DDP. When DDP really first got over as a performer, he was already in his mid-30s or late-30s. When Dave Bautista got his first big break, he was over 40. So that don't mean shit. Rico, I think, got a raw deal. I always thought Rico was actually a pretty good talent, very charismatic, had a great personality, and did not go as far as he could have, and that's not entirely his fault. But I could see Laforte kind of in a Rico-type role where he's brought up. Maybe he'll work some matches, but for the most part, they keep him as the manager or the mouthpiece for a group. I just don't know about this particular group. This team just seems very generic and basic to me. So, but Laforte is great. Then we had maybe the cheesiest Bo Dallas promo I've ever seen. And mind you, he's now your NXT champion. He is the top guy on NXT. But this was cheesy in a good way. I played it at the beginning of the sound off, so you heard the whole thing. It's obvious they're turning him heel. Basically, what you heard earlier was he was in a car, not moving, thank God. But he was in a car recording a cell phone video, it looked like, apologizing to all of his Bo-leavers for not being there this week. He's been so busy with interviews and publicity and all that stuff. But to prove that he was a man of his word, as he said the week before when he won the title, he was going to go to Disney World. He showed a picture at Disney World. He was wearing a Mickey Mouse hat. He had the NXT title draped over his shoulder. He looked like a complete nerd. But he said that he would be back next week on NXT. He promised it, and we all know if he promises something, he'll deliver. And then he started singing the Don't Stop Bo-Leaving song. You heard it earlier. I apologize for the china that I may have broken in people's apartments, the glasses that perhaps shattered. And it's actually quite fitting that he would sing that, given that James Gandolfini passed away this week. Although it would have been, this show was taped weeks ago, so it's just a coincidence. This pending heel turn may be the best thing that could ever happen to young Bo Dallas. The problem is, he's back out there doing live interviews in front of the audience. That's where it becomes a problem. That's something that he still really needs to work on. That contract signing segment with him and Biggie Langston a few weeks ago, not a good performance by Bo Dallas. But, you know, when he goes heel, he'll have to behave differently, speak differently. It worked for The Rock. I'm not going to say that he's going to be the next Rock, but it's certainly, here's a guy who was brought in. He was told to smile, almost to the point of wanting to vomit. He was out there smiling. He was your white meat, bread and butter baby face. Didn't work. People turned on him. He got hurt, came back, and took off from there. And he took out all that aggression that he had towards the fans, telling him to die and that he sucked. Maybe that's what Bo Dallas needs. He needs to be able to channel some of that when he finally does go heel all the way, kind of turn it back on the fans and say, you know, steered me in this direction. I gave you everything I had. You didn't return it to me, and so basically up yours, and I'm just going to work for myself and see what happens. You know, some people are cut out to be heels, some people aren't. But I thought what we saw from him in that one promo this week, cheesy as it was actually really, really good, and I'm very curious to see where they take this character going forward. Main event was Neville, Ohno, and Graves against Bray Wyatt and the Wyatt family. Solid main event. One observation from this match here is that Luke Harper is the more impressive of the team with he and Eric Rowan. Rowan is fine, but Harper is a really good big man worker. Not 7 feet tall or anything, but he's still a big dude. He's probably 6'5", 6'6". No surprise, given all the experience on the indies before he came to NXT when he wrestled as Brody Lee. He was all over the place. I mean, he wrestled in Ring of Honor, Chikara, Dragon Gate, Evolve. Rowan wrestled indies too, although none that I recognized. Both guys actually made their pro wrestling debuts in the same year, 2003. So a decade ago, they both debuted. But Harper is the better worker of the two. And since they're bringing all three of these guys up as a trio to the main roster, you know, whatever weaknesses that Rowan may have, they can hide them. So it actually works out perfectly. Match was good, though. Neville went for his corkscrew shooting star press, which is going to be interesting if Evan Bourne ever returns, and supposedly Evan Bourne is ready to come back like Christian was. It's just a matter of waiting for WWE to give him something to do. But when Evan Bourne comes back, and eventually they're going to bring Adrian Neville up to the main roster, it'll be very interesting because even though he does a corkscrew version of the move, I don't know that WWE would want two guys doing the same move, doing a shooting star press. There was a time when Vince McMahon didn't want anybody doing a shooting star press. He thought it was too dangerous. And he had Evan Bourne go out there, you know, hours before the show and practice and rehearse the move for him before he finally convinced Vince to let him do it. But Neville crashed and burned on the shooting star after Bray Wyatt got pulled out of the ring by Harper and Wyatt rolled him up for the pin. So, you know, much like the Shield on the main roster, the Wyatt family has been really kept strong on NXT. A lot of wins. I don't know if they're undefeated or not, but they've got a ton of victories, and we'll see if that push continues once they debut on television. I'm hearing it could be as early as this week that we may see the Wyatt family on Raw and or SmackDown. So they kept the Shield undefeated for almost 8 straight months as a unit. Would they do the same with the Wyatts? Do they have to? I don't think they have to, but I think people will measure how successful the Wyatt family is based on how WWE booked the Shield. I don't know that that's entirely fair. So, for example, if the Wyatt family comes up and a month in they lose their first match, I don't want to see people lose their shit and say, oh, they're burying the Wyatt family. Why couldn't they give them the Shield push? I don't think you have to keep them undefeated for 6 or 8 straight months. But it'll be interesting with two heel trio factions up at the same time, how WWE books the Wyatt family if they book them any differently. Some other quick news and notes here for WWE before we move on. Matt Stryker is no longer with the company. He was officially released on Thursday. No reason was given. They just didn't want to extend his deal. It ran out. And the very next day, he was already working indies. There was a family wrestling, I think, pay-per-view, FWE, I think they're called. He was doing announcing and some stuff for them. And there was an interview that I saw on YouTube that was done by Mike Johnson of PW Insider backstage at that indie show with Stryker. It's about 7 minutes long. And it's really sad to watch because Stryker starts crying at different parts of the interview. He's kind of breaking down. And he says, you know, it was my dream. My dream was to work for WWE. I got to live my dream. Now it's over. And I don't know what to do with myself. You know, I'll keep doing indies. September's not that far away. I could always go back to being a teacher, teach at the high school or community college level, he says. But you felt bad for the guy because you could tell he obviously is a big wrestling fan. He always wanted to do it. I know from knowing people, for example, who have trained in Brooklyn with Johnny Rods, who runs a wrestling school, and Johnny Rods has trained a lot of famous wrestlers, including the Dudleys, one of whom is now a world champion on TNA programming. But Matt Stryker also came from there, and I would be at some shows at, WUW is the promotion that Johnny Rods runs, and I've been to several shows there at the world-famous Gleason's Gym, and Matt Stryker would be there sometimes. So the dude is a big-time wrestling fan, and it sucks, you know, that he had that dream taken away from him for reasons that are apparently unbeknownst to him as much as they are to us. Stryker, when he was an announcer, and he would really lay it on thick, I mean, I think the downfall for him was at the Royal Rumble several years ago when it was a 3-man booth. I think it was him. Maybe it was him, Cole, and King. And it was the year that Booker T and Kevin Nash as Diesel both made their returns in the Rumble. So that probably would have been 2011. And Stryker on commentary was like a fan. He even said, he used the words marking out. He said, I'm marking out, bro. And I will say that it kind of made the hair on my arm stand up. Like, dude, just shut up. You know, it was a little over the top. And I, from what I understand, Vince was, you know, yelled at him backstage, and I don't think he lasted much longer after that as an announcer. He pretty much transitioned to being a backstage interviewer at that point. I think that may have been what did him in, but he wasn't bad. He was certainly better than some of the guys I hear on NXT, some of those people they've got doing commentary. So it's a shame. It's a shame that it had to happen. It was also announced this week that Fruity Pebbles is going all in with John Cena. Not only will John Cena continue to be on cereal boxes, he will also be featured in 2 different television commercials with the marketing based all around him. No more Fred Flintstone. For years, Fruity Pebbles was all about Fred Flintstone and Barney Rubble. No more. It's all about John Cena now. And one of the commercials has Cena eating a bowl of Fruity Pebbles to get his morning energy. I'm sure he eats his Fruity Pebbles every day. The other is him trying to get people to download a new mobile app. That's fucking great. Just what we need. Another app to be shoved down our throats. Apparently it's this app called Pebbles Picks, which will allow you, if you're interested, to make a photo of you standing next to an image of John Cena, and it makes it look like you're posing together inside a ring. So for those of you who are interested in that sort of thing, I guess you're in luck. But Cena owes The Rock a big thank you. He ought to cut The Rock a check for some of this endorsement money that he's getting, because were it not for that Rock promo 2 years ago when he came back, John Cena would not have this deal right now. That one throwaway line in that promo that Rock did about him looking like a great big bowl of Fruity Pebbles, and look what's happened. We should probably just blame Rock for this. This is all his fault. I'm going to breeze through Impact here, just some of the key things from the show, because we're running out of time here. I got a big mailbag to get to, so if you're a big TNA fan, sorry, but we got to get through this here. This was all about the Bound for Glory series. There was a whole series of Bound for Glory matches. They explained the point system, how you win points, how you lose points. You could lose points by being disqualified. So a bunch of people got a bunch of points. That's really all you need to know about that. The key story here was Sting dressed up as a normal civilian, wearing a suit and tie, just like he used to be during the days of the Main Event Mafia. He was there teasing that he was going to be unveiling at least one new member of his mafia. They showed somebody whose face was obscured. We saw a handshake backstage, didn't know who it was. And at the end of the show, there was a segment with Sting and Bully Ray in the ring, and Sting was attacking Bully. Bully backed off right into the waiting arms of Kurt Angle. Kurt Angle is officially the first member of Sting's new Main Event Mafia, which should be no surprise because Kurt Angle, I think, is the only former Main Event Mafia guy aside from Sting left on the TNA roster. Now, Taz did say something on commentary about how he was part of the Main Event Mafia. I have no recollection of this. I'm not saying it didn't happen. I don't remember Sting being Taz being part of that group. Maybe he was, but he don't count because he don't wrestle. So we put Taz on the side. I figure Kurt was a shoo-in. That really was as predictable a pick as I could have thought. The real question is who the other guys are going to be, because they don't have Nash, and hopefully they won't. They don't have Booker. They don't have Steiner, and I cannot envision a scenario in which Scott Steiner returns to TNA after the shit that went down with him and Hulk Hogan and Eric Bischoff after he left the last time. So that's what I'm really interested to find out. Who do they fill these other spots with? Or is it just going to be Sting and Angle? But here's the thing about Sting and Angle that makes no sense to me. The whole reason Sting even went back to reform the Main Event Mafia in the first place was because, as he said, at Slammiversary, when he was getting the shit kicked out of him by the Aces and Eights, not one person from the TNA locker room backstage came out to help him. They all left him out there to die. Kurt Angle wrestled on that show. He had a match with AJ Styles where he actually won. So it wasn't even like Kurt got hurt. He got laid out. Kurt had a match. He won. He went to the back. Where the fuck was Kurt Angle? His so-called family. Shouldn't he be pissed at him, too? So that's a little bit of a storyline oversight, I would say. That doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. But, Angle put the ankle lock on Bully, left him laying, and that's how Impact went off the air. But there were some other noteworthy things from this show. I want to mention the Knockouts segment that they had on this show. There was a State of the Knockouts Division speech given by one Brooke Hogan. The same Brooke Hogan who just a few weeks ago on Impact basically quit her job and said that she didn't want to be the head of the Knockouts Division anymore. She surrendered the position. And I speculated whether or not that actually happened or if Hulk talked her out of it. I guess she must have been talked out of it because she was here this week. She was all dressed up, you know, trying to look her best, and she was out there pretending to be, Vince McMahon. She had a podium in there and everything, and they had the whole Knockouts Division, which was like five women, although I don't know where Tara was. Tara was conspicuous by her absence. Madison Rain, I know, just either had a kid or is about to have a kid, so she's out on maternity leave. I have no idea where Tara is. Eric Young was out there with ODB, and they had with them the Knockouts Tag Team titles, the same Knockouts Tag Team titles that have not been defended. I couldn't even tell you the last time they were defended. I think they won them like a year and a half ago, 2 years ago. Why even have Knockouts tag belts? Is that really necessary? I think TNA finally came to their senses. They had Brooke kind of bring it up, and Eric Young said, okay, I know this is shocking, but I am in fact not a woman. And then he had a very curious line. Instead of just giving the belts up, which is what he did, and I assume that those belts are going to be thrown in the trash bin and never seen again, he said, we were never really the champions. So here you go. Never really the champions? Why were you walking around with belts for the last 2 years? I thought that was kind of odd. It's a weird thing to say. So, no more Knockouts tag team belts, thank God. We had an announcement made regarding Gail Kim and Taryn Terrell. They had that great match at Slammiversary, and they will have a rematch. They're going to have a rematch. It's going to be on Impact in Vegas. Now, Impact is taping in Vegas, I believe, next Saturday, because they don't want to run a live show on July 4th, which falls into Thursday this year, so that week Impact will be taped. So I guess Impact the next 2 weeks will be taped. But when they tape Impact in Vegas, it will be a ladder match, Taryn Terrell and Gail Kim. They didn't explain what would be hanging from the ceiling in this ladder match. I would assume it's a contract, maybe, for a Knockouts title shot. They didn't say, but it's a ladder match. I'm looking forward to it. They had a kick-ass match at the pay-per-view, and if they give the women time, I think they'll go out there and they'll be, again, motivated to want to put on a great performance. I am very anxious to see what Taryn Terrell and Gail Kim can go out there and do. I'm actually looking forward to this Knockouts match. And the other thing Brooke Hogan revealed was that she spoke with Velvet Sky's doctor. And according to the doctor, she is now cleared to return from her knee injury. So Mickie James is going to have to defend her championship on Impact next week against Velvet Sky. And Mickie James, again, was awesome in this segment. Just over the top, obnoxious, psycho Mickie heel shit. She's awesome. And we'll get that match next week. So that was the segment. Eventually, Brooke Hogan left the building at her father's request. His father said, "Your job here is done. Go back to the hotel." And that was the last we saw of Brooke Hogan. Bully Ray was on the phone talking to his wife, trying to get her to come back. She never did come back. Instead, Bully got jumped by the new Main Event Mafia at the end of the show. AJ Styles and Samoa Joe had the best match on the show. It was a Bound for Glory series match. And they went at it until the time limit expired, so I don't remember what the time limit was, if it was probably 15 minutes, I'm guessing. I mean, maybe 10, but it felt like a long match, probably 15 minutes. They beat the crap out of each other. When the match was over, AJ Styles' nose, he was all bloodied up. They were laying the shots in there, man, and it made for a great match. Now, these two guys have had classic matches before, although it's been a number of years, and they're both older now, but this was a great match. It's worth going out of your way to see. I guess because they went to a draw, nobody gets points, or maybe they both get points. I don't remember all the point values, so just look them up if you want to know. But if you want to see one match on Impact, this is the match to go back and see. Hulk Hogan also had a meeting on this show with Chris Sabin, who is, of course, the X Division champion, Kenny King, the former champion, and Suicide. And he announced that next week on Impact will be an X Division championship match, another three-way, because they all have to be three-ways. It's the new rule. The winner of that match will face Bully Ray for the World Heavyweight Championship live on Impact in Kentucky next month. I think July 18th is the date. That will be the Destination X version of Impact. So we'll get that X Division three-way next week. And I would presume that Sabin is going to be facing Bully, because Kenny King versus Bully Ray makes no sense. Suicide, I love Suicide, but Suicide versus Bully is probably Suicide in terms of the ratings. I wouldn't go for that match. Then again, Impact's ratings overall probably would lead most television executives to Suicide, so it really doesn't matter, but I assume Sabin is going to win that match. Jeff Hardy had a Bound for Glory series match as well on the show with Bobby Roode. Pretty good, not too long. They've had much better matches, and Hardy won. You know, Bobby Roode, I just have to say, Bobby Roode and Austin Aries both on this show, they've reached a point now where they just seem like they're just there. And I think that sucks, because they're both so good. I feel like they need to be in a meaningful program, whether it's for a championship or not. They deserve to be promoted on that show as main event level guys in something worthwhile, and they're just not. They're just going out there, they get beat, they're just kind of floundering. You know, right now the top feud is Hulk Hogan and Bully Ray, and now you've got Sting back in the mix and his little main event mafia, his little crew. So the show is basically just built around those guys, but what about Aries and Roode? As much as I enjoy their act in TNA, and Bobby Roode became a name in TNA, I think they've reached that point now where I kind of wish they were in WWE and got the hell away from TNA, because TNA doesn't seemingly have any plans for them. Where do they go from here? I feel like they've reached that level now where to get to the next level, they've got to go to WWE. What else is there for them to do? They're never going to get above the level they're at now. The way the wrestling business is now, there's one big game in town. Like it or not, that's just how it is. And if TNA ain't going to do shit with these guys, then you know what? WWE ought to give them a shot. But I would assume they're locked up to a long-term deal, so there's probably not a lot that could be done. But I think that sucks. And speaking of things that suck, Zema Ion failed to meet the $30,000 goal his girlfriend set for him in that online fundraising campaign to help pay for his medical bills. He had the emergency appendectomy, and he's got another surgery set for early next month to remove a growth on his bladder. He raised over $6,600, and I'm of the impression that much like these other services like Kickstarter and Indiegogo, if you don't meet your goal and raise the full amount of money, I don't think he gets any of the money at all. I mean, maybe Give Forward works differently, but I don't think they do. Still no indication whatsoever that TNA did anything to provide any help. If they did, and they're keeping it hush-hush, good for them. But until I hear otherwise, I think it's really sad that they could not do something to help this guy out. You know, auction some signed TNA items online or something. Anything. And they apparently did nothing. It's pathetic. Let's move on to the mailbag. If you have questions you'd like to send in to the Sound Off, you could email me at thesolomonster@gmail.com. If you want to hear yourself on the Sound Off, we're going to try something a little bit different here in the coming weeks. See how it goes. We are now also accepting audio questions. MP3 format only. You can keep them brief, preferably no more than 30 seconds or so. And try to shy away from the profanity if you can. Leave that to me. But if you're going to send in an audio question, please also include your question in written form in the body of that same email as well. It's a little experiment. We'll try it out, see how it goes. And but again, yeah, if you want to potentially hear yourself on the show, you can submit your question in audio format. Again, MP3 format only. And we'll try this. We'll see what happens. In the meantime, we have your regular questions here. We'll go with Matt first. Matt says, while I'm super excited for the Brock Lesnar-CM Punk feud, I think Brock needs to dust off the old vocal cords and start speaking. Part of what makes Punk so great are his mic skills, and I think it would enhance their feud if the two of them did some verbal sparring. Also, it's getting a little old watching Brock come out, circle the ring, and then silently attack, only to have Paul Heyman come out the following week to explain his motives. Oh no, that is what's so great about Brock Lesnar. He's a shark who circles his prey and then pounces on them. I agree. I mean, Brock should at least have one segment in the build-up to their match where he and Punk have a nice back-and-forth. But, you know, it's WWE, which means it's going to be scripted. And Brock Lesnar memorizing lines, you know, like he did. Remember that one contract signing he did with John Laurinaitis last year before the big match against John Cena at Extreme Rules? Go back and watch that segment, and then you come back to me and you tell me if it's a good idea to have Brock Lesnar out there reciting lines. That's a really bad idea. If they just let the guy go out there and play off Punk a little bit, maybe get a few one-liners off about how he's, you know, he's so much bigger than Punk, he'll kill him or he'll kick his ass or something, that's fine. I thought Brock was kind of entertaining whenever he would cut promos on his opponents in UFC, and those promos certainly weren't scripted for him. But Brock is so far out of his league compared to Punk when it comes to promos. You've got to hide that weakness and accentuate the strengths, which Paul Heyman used to be so good at in ECW. Otherwise, you just end up with whatever the hell that go-home segment was on the Raw Before Payback with Ryback, that atrocity of a segment, and we don't want that. Maddie writes in, so we go from Matt to Maddie here. With WWE apparently heading in the direction of Brian versus Cena, do you think the Bella Twins will at some point be included in their storyline? This Total Divas show on E! Is set to air soon, so this will expose their relationships, and seeing how WWE loves to blur the lines between reality and fantasy, I could definitely see them bringing in the Bellas to get a few more matches between the two, much like AJ last year with the whole Brian Punk Kane storyline. What say you? I think they are going to have footage of Brian and Cena with their respective twin on the show. So, you know, yeah, it wouldn't shock me at all to see them brought into their feud at some point. If they're going to do it, I say wait until later in the feud. Don't bring them in right away, because John Cena versus Daniel Bryan is a fresh match. It's a unique match. It sells itself. We don't need the frickin' Bella Twins involved at the beginning. Yeah, they did that shit with Rock and Austin in the build-up to WrestleMania 17. They made Deborah the Rock's manager, even though she was Austin's wife. It was a dumb decision, because it wasn't necessary. I think they realized that, because she ended up having nothing to do with the match at WrestleMania. She wasn't even there. And some people think that's the greatest WrestleMania main event of all time. I don't, but some people do. Now, picture that same match with Deborah constantly interfering or getting in the way. You know, that may have worked for the Hogan Savage match of WrestleMania. It was all built around Elizabeth being at ringside. But that was the whole angle. The whole angle was, it hinged on Elizabeth. And she was great in that role. It was all built around Elizabeth and Savage's jealousy. It was awesome. It was probably the best angle they ever did, or one of the best. you know, Deborah, they just kind of stuck her in there for no reason. So yeah, maybe later on if the feud spans maybe a few pay-per-view rematches, but at first, no way. Gareth writes in, who was a superstar in WWE history that could have been a top star but was hindered by personality, injury, or politics? Well, I'm sure there have been a lot, but I'll name a few. First name that comes to mind for me is Brian Pillman. Brian Pillman would have been a top guy were it not for the ankle injury. I have no doubt about that. John Morrison. John Morrison could have been a top guy were it not for his terrible promos and the fact that his girlfriend was a crazy lady, which did him no favors. I mean, if The Miz could go on to become WWE champion, there's no reason why John Morrison, who's a much better athlete than The Miz is, no reason why Morrison wouldn't have had the same chance were it not for those things. Carlito. Carlito could have been a top guy because WWE wanted him to be. I really think they did, and they gave him every opportunity to succeed. And it was his personality that worked against him and this perception that he was lazy or he didn't care. Remember that promo Ric Flair cut on him on television, which was part of a storyline, but they were sending him a message with that promo. And at one point, he went to Vince McMahon, he quit, and I guess Vince talked him out of quitting and told him they were going to do something with him, stick around. You know, maybe it wasn't Carlito's fault. Maybe he fell victim to the whole, I think they're going to push me, and then they stopped pushing me. So he just stopped giving a shit, and they looked at him as lazy, which may have been a little unfair, maybe. But Carlito could have been a top guy, absolutely. He had a unique look. They wanted him to succeed. Just didn't work out. This comes from Jorge. Which superstars from the past do you think would have a memorable match with Daniel Bryan? Also, do you think WWE is ever going to have a pay-per-view overseas? That first question is a trick question because I think Daniel Bryan could have a memorable match with pretty much anyone from the past. Note, you said memorable match, not a great match. So, for example, I think Daniel Bryan could have a very memorable match with the Ultimate Warrior, especially if we got crazy Daniel Bryan. Warrior's always crazy, so that would be very entertaining. If it's a great match you're looking for, I would have loved to have seen Daniel Bryan and Bret Hart. Daniel Bryan against Shawn Michaels, his original trainer, would have been something else. Bryan back in the territory days against Ric Flair as the visiting NWA World Champion when Flair would always go out of his way to make the local guy look strong. That would have been an amazing match. Kurt Angle may not exactly be a wrestler from the past since he's still active, but Kurt Angle versus Daniel Bryan is a match I would love to see in a WWE ring, and who knows, you know, Kurt's still active, and we may actually get to see that match one day. As far as a pay-per-view overseas, I'm sure it'll happen. I mean, we used to have those UK-only pay-per-views. If it's a WrestleMania you're talking about, I am convinced there will be an international, and by international I mean not Canada, an international WrestleMania one year. I just don't see it happening for many more years. I think they would do a SummerSlam or a Survivor Series maybe, a show like that, before they would do WrestleMania, maybe as like a test to see how things go. But it's the expense and it's the time zone difference. That's why they haven't done that since SummerSlam in 92. That's a long time. That's over 20 years. They have not gone back to do a pay-per-view from overseas that wasn't specific to that market. So I do think it's going to happen. I just have no idea when that's going to be. And I certainly hope they don't have a WrestleMania overseas in the next 4 years. Noah, Mark, and I have a little bet going. And if they do have a WrestleMania overseas in the next 4 years, I owe him a steak dinner. And I am a highly competitive person. I don't want to buy him a steak dinner. Damien has this to say. WWE probably wonders why they can't get big ratings anymore. Maybe if they stopped screwing over potentially huge stars like Dolph Ziggler and Daniel Bryan, people would care more. Maybe if they stopped putting guys in WWE Championship feuds who were just made to look really weak, like Ryback and Mark Henry, more people would care. Ryback got a title shot after Mark Henry embarrassed him. Mark Henry apparently is now going to challenge Cena after he just lost to Sheamus and had a storyline where he basically cried and went home after Sheamus beat him. Then we get a great Divas feud that people seem to care about, and of course Stephanie puts herself right in the middle of it. I cringed every time Stephanie opened her mouth. I feel like WWE is in as good a position as they've ever been with young talent, but I don't trust the people in charge of that talent to do the right thing. The only thing they've handled right is the Shield. That comes from Damien. the Ryback Henry stuff, I can't argue. It really doesn't make much sense. And the Triple H stuff with Curtis Axel was just stupid. All I can say, though, is just have faith. Stay the course. They are doing right by the Shield. I've got high hopes for the Wyatt family. And as far as Bryan and Ziggler go, they're starting to do the right thing by those guys also. It took them long enough, but they're getting there now. You know, they heard the fans. They wanted Ziggler as a babyface. Now they're getting him as a babyface. Soon enough, he'll have the world title back. Hopefully, he'll be more over than he was before he lost it. Bryan, they've certainly heard the fan reactions to him, and they're giving him the big push. He's going to get his WWE title match at some point with John Cena, hopefully at SummerSlam. So, keep the faith. This comes to us from Cheeky Pun Guy. Paul Heyman tweeted that the entire WWE universe was buzzing about the return of RVD. Who do you think is buzzing more, the WWE Universe or RVD himself at home right now? Will he be a significant player, or will his dreams of a return to the main event go up in smoke? Either way, I think we'd agree that this move has created some excitement for Monday nights again. Well played, Cheeky Pun Guy, well played. This RVD news has me in a daze. It's nice to see he was able to make a joint decision with WWE to return. Supposedly they have a program in mind for him, so hopefully he doesn't get burned by the writing team and they change their plans. All right, that's enough of that. Dion from the Bronx, New York. If WWE bought out TNA, do you think they would get high ratings like The Walking Dead on AMC? I love The Walking Dead. It's a damn good show. Do you think any show in the history of television has gotten ratings like that show? In the history of television? Not even close. Plenty of shows on broadcast TV do more viewers on average than The Walking Dead. I mean, hell, back in the day, the frickin' Golden Girls would average something like 15 to 20 million households on average per episode. And I think that was on what these days would be considered one of the worst nights for television, on Saturday nights. Back then, shows on Fridays and Saturdays did great numbers. But there were also a lot fewer options on TV back then compared to what we have today. Walking Dead does great numbers, better than even some broadcast shows do. Last season, it was either the mid-season premiere or the finale, I forget which. Did over 12 million viewers. That includes the replays. I think without the replays, it was something like 7 million, which is incredible for a cable show. If WWE buys out TNA and ROH together at the same time on the same day and brings that talent over to their roster, they're still not going to come close to those kinds of numbers. It's not happening. And October cannot come quick enough because I'm ready for season 4 now that you've reminded me about that show. That's going to do it for the mailbag. If you have questions, including audio questions, you can email them to me, thesolemonster@gmail.com. And before we wrap things up this week here, I have to talk about this. Paula Deen is a celebrity cook. She had her own show, had being the operative word, since Food Network has canned her ass. She had a show on the Food Network. She grew up in the South, a lot of Southern comfort-type cooking, a lot of fried shit. Stuff that's just bad for you, but we all like. So she became really famous and popular, and she's had some troubles public relations-wise recently. And this latest thing just cost her job. She was alleged to have used the N-word and a lot of racially sensitive language. There was some discrimination suit, I guess, that was brought against her. She just put some YouTube videos up where she apologized and whatever. And everyone's making a big deal about it. And her argument is she doesn't deny using the language. But she grew up at a time when, back then in the South, and again, she's a 60-something-year-old woman, so I'm sure when she was brought up, her family and people around her were probably using language that today you just wouldn't use. I don't even have a problem with that. You know, it's not like she turned around to somebody and used the N-word last week or last year. So I don't see what the big deal is about all of that. That doesn't really bother me so much. What bothers me so much about this woman, because I was aware of who she was previously, last year, because of another controversy that she was involved in. She announced that she had been diagnosed with type 2 diabetes. And she became aware of that 3 years ago, but kept it to herself. She opted not to reveal that. And that's her prerogative. You know, that's her personal health. She doesn't have to come public and let people know that she has type 2 diabetes. But it looks kind of bad, because she didn't reveal that, even though she knew about it, and yet she continued to crank out stuff like I didn't even think this was real. I had to look this up because I knew, generally speaking, the kind of food that she cooked up. But this blew my mind. She apparently cooked up stuff that included this thing called the Krispy Kreme Burger. And you can imagine what that was. A hamburger on a Krispy Kreme donut. And apparently one of her other favorite things in the world was deep-fried cheesecake. So she's doing this shit, cooking up a storm, and she's got type 2 diabetes, and nobody knows about this. Again, hey, her prerogative. She's just doing a cooking show. Doesn't mean that I have to go out and eat a Krispy Kreme burger. But it's a little odd. And what made it a whole big controversy is the fact that when she revealed that she had type 2 diabetes, she did so at the exact same time that it was announced she was going to be the new spokesperson, essentially, for this diabetes medication called Victoza. She reached some sort of deal with a pharmaceutical company and was going to make money off this shit. That, to me, doesn't speak very well to this woman's character. So I have more of a problem with her pulling a stunt like that, cooking up these freaking death meals without people knowing that this woman herself has made herself sick through all this horrible eating. And then she finally decides after 3 years to announce it to the world. And at the same time, she's going to be promoting a diabetes medication and making money off that. And probably hawking that product. So she'll cook this shit, tell people to eat it, or not tell people to eat it. But you know people are going to eat it anyway. And so when they get sick, hey, buy this. Tell your doctor to give you a prescription for this. This will help you. This will help knock out the diabetes. I'm way more offended by that shit than I am this other story, which to me is almost like a non-story. There may be other evidence out there that maybe she is a closeted racist. I mean, who knows? But just based on that whole thing, you know, oh, I grew up in the South. That's how I was raised. I'm not a racist, blah, blah, blah. Reason I bring this up, first of all, I think this woman is a fraud and a phony. That's number one. But number two, I was thoroughly entertained. And there are times, this is one of those times where Twitter is just so damn awesome. It could be the most maddening thing, or it could be the most entertaining thing in the world, depending on how you use it. Somebody created the hashtag Paula Deen TV shows. And based on this whole story, people were creating the names of television shows that Paula Deen herself would probably watch if they were real. Now, obviously, none of these are real, but I want to read to you a list that I compiled. This is not an official list that anybody else put together. I was going through these messages laughing my ass off, and I put together in no particular order a list of the top 10 Paula Deen TV shows. Now, if you are offended by racially tinged comedy, you may want to skip this part, but here we go. Top 10 list of Paula Deen TV shows. Number one, Law and Order. The Black Guy Did It. Number two, How I Bought Your Mother. Number three, this is terrible. Master Rogers' Neighborhood. That's bad. Number four, Guess Who's Not Coming to Dinner. Number five, White Family Matters. This may be going over the heads of some of our international listeners because a lot of these are based off. I mean, Guess Who's Coming to Dinner was a famous movie with Sidney Poitier, but a lot of these are television shows, at least here in this country. So I don't know if anybody would even know some of these, but anyway. White Family Matters, I certainly know what that one means. Enslaved by the Bell. Back in the day, there used to be a television sitcom called Hangin' with Mr. Cooper. Paula Deen doesn't like Hangin' with Mr. Cooper. Now, Paula Deen likes Hangin' Mr. Cooper. We have According to Jim, Crow. So You Think You Can Vote. And last but not least, Parks and Segregation. I thought those were funny. Those were some of the better ones, actually. You can find a whole bunch more if you just use the hashtag Paula Deen TV shows. Should come right up. You can follow me on Twitter, too, while you're on there. At Solomonster is my handle. And we have an official Facebook profile page, facebook.com/TheSolomonster. You can send me a friend request, and I will approve you. And also, don't forget you can make a PayPal donation to this show if you go to TheSolomonster.com. Scroll down just a little bit. Right-hand column, you'll see a little PayPal donate box. We accept all sorts of currency, I'm sure, wherever you may be in the world. And anything you can contribute, I certainly would appreciate. So you can visit thesolomonster.com for that. That's going to do it for episode 280. I want to thank each and every one of you for tuning into the show this week on SE Scoop, Stitcher, Android app, iTunes, Mars, wherever you may be, however you get the show. Thank you for supporting it. be back here next weekend for episode 281. So until then, be well, stay safe, and we will see you right back here next week.
You've been listening to the Sala Monster Sounds Off, giving you the good. The bad.
Raw is now 3 hours every Monday at 8.
And the ugly.
Hello. Why does Jerry Lawler insist on telling us that we are just getting started? The fuck have I been watching for the past 2 hours?
Well, mostly the good.
I don't want to K-fab you.
You're going to K-fab me?
The Sala Monster Sounds Off.
Since 2007 on SEScoops.com, TheSalaMonster.com, and Stitcher Radio, The Sala Monster Sounds Off.